So my guest today is the Great Britain baseball catcher, a veteran of the Great Britain baseball scene at the age of 28, having been with the team since the 2009 World Cup. Chris was drafted in the 20th round of the 2010 amateur draft by the Cincinnati Reds, and he spent the last season with the club's AAA affiliate, the Louisville Bats. He's also the general manager of his own coaching facility down in Virginia, Primetime Baseball. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Hey, how are you doing? Thanks for having me today.
No problem. So we're going to begin, as all good stories should, at the beginning. So you are, I believe, a native of Maryland, and you spent your time at the University of Michigan, which, as you were saying beforehand, and I think guys over here in the UK will know it as a football school with Tom Brady and all that. How come you you got your place in Michigan? How did you end up there as I believe you were actually the skipper of the baseball team there too.
So what kind of happens, I'm from D.C., Washington, D.C., which I know more of the Brits will understand where that is. And I just went to school up at University of Michigan. My facility is down in D.C.
So we pretty much have a bunch of the – a lot of guys going around town pretty much trying to run all of D.C. with the baseball, which is always fun. I mean, I got up to Michigan just on a normal showcase, which I'm sure some of you, the younger players, will understand. You know, I went up to Natick, Massachusetts out of high school. Had to put on a good showing there, and then University of Michigan wanted me. I talked to the coach, Rich Maloney, and, you know, and one thing led to the other. So that's how I kind of ended up there, and you know, honestly, the middle of the cold weather, because it's quite freezing up there.
Yeah, I imagine it is. Rather more so than the southern states where you spend most of your time, and I guess even more so than certainly than Kentucky, but I guess Ohio too. From Michigan, you were there. You did your full 4-year stint at University of Michigan, and then were picked up by the Reds. It's always interesting to hear people's draft day stories. So you were taken in the 20th round. Did you have any inkling that you were going to come off the board? And how did the Reds get in touch with you and sort of communicate with you that you were their guy?
Absolutely. It was funny because I put up a really, really, really good year. I mean, I was at like 390 and 400 for most of the year with a bunch of home runs. And so I knew I had a good chance to get drafted. And I know there was a lot of interest. And my dad and mom were all obviously pumped for me. They're excited. And I just told my dad, I was like, Dad, you know, I don't want to watch the whole rounds. This draft is crazy long. So we pretty much were in Ann Arbor and we're just like, all right, let's just go to the golf course. So we literally just played the slowest round of golf. And I always had my phone on me just to check. And, you know, I was expecting to go a little bit higher, which I pretty much think every kind of baseball player does, when, especially with the scouts saying stuff to you. But, you know, I got home from the golf course, and sure enough, I got the call from the Cincinnati Reds saying they drafted me. And, it was a pretty cool, amazing time, especially kind of seeing my pops just, he kind of, you know, like broke down in a sense and just was, you know, super proud of me. And so it was cool, but, you know, and it was like from that day on, it was like, okay, next time we got to try and make it as far as we can in this game. And I've been willing to stay so healthy throughout it.
And what happened then? You know, what was the communication with the Reds? What did they say to you? You know, you need to be at this place by this date. You need to report to Mickey Campbell.
They almost said about 5 days we're going to go down to Arizona to play for 3 games, and then you're going to be shipped off to Billings, Montana. So I was like, oh, well, cool. At least we're going to somewhere different. I've never been to Montana before. That's in the northern part of America. And that's pretty much where it was. It was, all right, you're going on here. Good luck. You know, they didn't really give me a plan or anything. It was just go out and play and compete hard.
Excellent. And so you've been with the Reds organization for the last 6 years. And last year you spent the whole season, I think, as the primary catcher for the Bats. So how did last season go? It looked like, you know, looking at your stat line, looking at your slash line, you had a good year. You know, it was a sort of pickup in terms of you know, finding your place in the team and getting regular reps and regular at bats. Is there anything that you can put that down to, particularly that sort of pickup in performance?
You know, I think you honestly hit it on the head. It was just getting those consistent reps and honestly starting to know my swing as a player, because being a switch hitter, it's quite difficult at times, because there'll be times when you feel really good from one side of the plate and then
sure enough, the other pitcher is pitching the whole game. So if you feel good lefty, then you got a lefty on the mound, so you get to switch over. And it always seems like it works like that. But it was just a consistent reps of, and I always figured I was always able to hit, but then it was the problem I always had was timing. And so if you're playing once every 4, 5, 6 days, because I was behind Tucker Barnhart for, good 5 years of those, it's tough to get your timing. And so when you start playing every day, you know, I think my timing just improved a little bit, and I was able to put together one of my best, actually the best year I've ever had.
Yeah, it certainly seemed that way. And with switch hitting, what can you do, if anything, to sort of get through that? Is it just, make sure that you take reps on both sides in BP? Is that really all you can do? Or is there anything in terms of a different approach on either side?
Two different swings, and it's just, you know, if a kid ever wants to switch hit over here, I always tell him, we'll be ready just to work extra hard, you know, even more so than you've ever imagined. You got to do it from one side, and you got to do it from the other side. And there was times, like when I was growing up, it was pretty frustrating, but my dad always stuck to it. And, you know, push me a little bit as much as I could be pushed without going over the top. But, you know, it has been difficult. It's definitely very, very tough because, like I said before, it's two different swings.
Yeah. So we're going to come on to GB in a few minutes' time. But there's a few more questions to talk about from the club career. Now, you were playing for GB in the European Championships in the Netherlands, but I think if I understand correctly from conversations I've had with some people in the setup, there was somewhere that you would rather have been, and that would have been in Cincinnati itself. I think you were hoping that uptick in performance was going to see you in Cincinnati this September. So were you disappointed that wasn't the case and you ended up in Hoofddorp instead?
I was pretty upset. I'm not going to lie, because, I mean, that's been a goal for, you know, obviously your whole career. If you ever play baseball or watch baseball, you always dream of playing in the big leagues. But I did make a pact with my now wife that I was like, if we don't get to the big leagues, then at least the trade-off. She came over to Netherlands with us and the team, and GB was just outstanding, and we kind of just embraced her into the family. So, I mean, we had a great, great alternative. Obviously, it would have been very sweet to represent GB in the big leagues, you know, but, you know, it all works out for a reason eventually. But, I mean, we had a great time in the Netherlands and then heading over to Brooklyn. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun following you. Certainly seeing the trajectory from maybe some of those games over in the Netherlands that you might have hoped to win that didn't quite come off to you know, that awesome performance. And we'll talk again a little bit more on that in a moment.
Absolutely.
So just sort of dwelling on the Reds, uh-huh. That you played with some sort of pretty hot ticket players last year, some guys who were getting good write ups in the prospect chart. So guys like Amir Garrett and Jesse Winker, Robert Stevenson. So you've got to see these guys up close every day. So from your perspective, you know, how far can they go? Are these people we should be putting in our fantasy teams? Are they people who will be watching every day soon?
There's no doubt about it. These are definitely the future of the Cincinnati Reds. And I mean, they couldn't be nicer kids too. You know, and I say kids, I mean, they're probably, 21 to 24 right now. But I've worked with Rob Stevenson for, good 3 to 4 years. I've seen him grow. I've seen his ups and downs. Amir, I just caught this year. Same with Cody Reed. And, I mean, you know, they have all the stuff. You know, half of the stuff that makes a big league picture is that mental side of it. How do you come back when you don't have your best stuff? And that's the part of the game they're working on right now, and that'll dictate whether they're up in the big leagues this year or not. But they'll be there, and they're going to be there for most likely a long time, you know, God willing, with injuries and everything. But, you know, I consider them some of my closer friends, and I still talk to them. I mean, yesterday we were just talking to a few of the guys, and we still joke around. So, you know, I look forward to watching them this year. I'm sure they're going to tear it up a little bit.
Yeah, so that's fantastic, and I guess it's a pleasure for you somewhat to be able to watch those guys and think that you played a role in what it is that they're doing now, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, I watch it. Even the guys in the big leagues right now. When I got one of my really really good buddies, it's Adelman, Michael Lorenzen's over there, and I mean, I'm sure I'm missing a few names, but I've pretty much caught that entire staff right now. So, you know, obviously you wish them well, and you wish they would just tear it up as well, and
And sort of turning to you personally, you left the Reds organization at the end of last season, having spent 6 years there, as we've mentioned already. So what's the plan for the future? When we were chatting before we started the record, you mentioned that this has been quite a difficult off season for not just people in your position, but guys with a lot of big league experience under their belt as well. So is there anything in the offing? Are you going to be doing spring training somewhere? Are there any offers from Indie Ball, for example, that might sort of keep your head in the game over the next sort of 6 months or so?
No, that's a very, very fair question. And honestly, you know, it's like that type of stuff. You're not sure of what's going to happen. I don't know. And I've reached out to a lot of buddies and they've been
signed in March and missed all of spring training or they just kind of signed late. So I'm not sure what's going to happen. For me, I have been reached out to a few indie ball teams, and that's something, you know, my family kind of has to discuss in a sense whether I want to do that and kind of stay in the game. You know, we have good options in coaching here in the area to kind of let the whole baseball season die down and kind of pursue that next fall. So, you know, as of right now, I guess I got to take it day by day. You know, I'm hitting, throwing, lifting, staying in shape, catching. So it's just kind of saying how a day by day, and my agent and I kind of taking care of things, seeing what's out there. You know, God willing, hopefully a team to sign me and take a chance. So we'll just kind of have to see.
Well, fingers crossed from all of us over here. We had the disappointing news that Chris Reed sort of moved on from the game last week. So I don't think we could cope with that in two in a fortnight, Chris. So, you know, we're sort of pulling for you from over the other side of the pond.
No, I didn't even hear that. I didn't hear that.
Yeah, it sort of snuck out. I think he's moved on, but that's a shame. Anyway, so whilst we're on the topic of GB baseball, let's sort of stay there. So you said you're from Washington, D.C. yourself. I think the question on a lot of people's ears who will be listening to this on their commute into work is, how do you come to represent the U.K. as a guy born in Washington, D.C.?
It's a funny story, and it's kind of like I don't know how it kind of happened, but it was just, you know, like fate kind of going that way.
So my junior year, I believe it was, going into senior year, we had a volunteer coach who is still, I consider, very, you know, who helped me out tremendously in this game, who is actually a legend of GB baseball. And the older fans of GB baseball will know him greatly. His name's Brant Ost. He played AAA ball all the way back for the Mariners, I believe. And so he helped me out, and one day he comes into the locker room, and he was just like, any of you guys have any British heritage in you? And I'm kind of sitting there in my locker, and I was like, does my mom count, who was born and raised, my grandparents still live in Southfields? Wait, that's got to count for me, too. So I was like, I kind of raised my hand up, and he was like, what? You've been here this whole time, and your mom is born and raised in Southfields, right next to Wimbledon, and you haven't said anything? I was like, yeah, they're like, sorry. And so he took the process under his wing, got dual citizenship, you know, and I was able to head over to the Netherlands, I think it was that fall. Right in September. And ever since there, you know, I've reached out to the coaches and they've all been outstanding, and I've been able to travel the world and represent GB, which has been nothing short of amazing. And, you know, I'm just glad we've been able to build this program from what it has, because I know we've gotten a few more minor league guys on. So that's kind of where the start came from. And I've just been blessed to go all over the world with you guys.
And had you ever, like, actually traveled over to the UK before you pulled on the uniform?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Every summer when I was in, you know, like, obviously summers in high school, I had to play baseball. But before that, when my grandparents, they've passed now. I mean, every summer we were over there for 2 to 3 weeks, you know, so I got to travel all around. Big fan of the tube.
I know it sounds like a silly question, but we spoke to Jordan Serena before the World Baseball Classic, and he hadn't and was asking us all of the good places to go in Suffolk, which is where his family is from, around Ipswich. Yeah. And we weren't able to give him many recommendations, unfortunately.
London, so it's been a blast. I've been able to get over there.
Yeah, and London, you know, anyone can find their way around London after a couple of days, I guess.
Exactly.
And you've been involved since 2009, and you mentioned in your answer to the last question that, you know, there's a few more minor league guys involved. I mean, what, as a guy who's been quite heavily involved and watched it, do you feel like the program here has sort of taken a step forward in your time as part of the team?
There's no question about it, you know, and the funniest thing that I see is I try and talk to everyone in the pro game, and they all ask me, in a sense, they're like, oh, GB, they actually have a team. And that was the original point when I got into the game. And ever since now, you know, they're starting to not, you know, fear us, but they're starting to be like, oh, yeah, you guys got a pretty good program over there. You can start seeing that they're up and coming. Which is something that definitely wasn't being said, let's say, 5 to 6 years ago. And I know Donald Lutz has been my teammate over in Germany for, 7 years, the whole time. And we have our friendly battles, and obviously we always want to beat the Germans over there. But, you know, so it definitely has shifted, and there's definitely more respect in it, which is, you know, it's the start.
That's interesting that you had a sort of World War II banter in the Louisville locker room. Who'd ever have thought that?
We had Lutz, and then we had another guy, Ray Chang, who's a legend for China. And so between us three, just going back and forth, and obviously, you know, we're working to get on China's level, and I think both Germany is as well. It made it a good kind of ballpark conversation that I'm sure a lot of people would like to eavesdrop in.
Yeah, definitely. That's a pretty eclectic group, isn't it? And the German league, I think, is quite good quality from what I'm led to believe. They're certainly, I know there's a couple of the GB guys play over there, that I think, too.
Definitely. They do a good job with their whole program. I've seen the little kids out there, you know. Hopefully one day we can get that here all over GB, just to kind of keep growing, to
have the little kids play, because I know I talked to Liam quite a bit, and that was our first goal, is just to get the coaching for the little guys. You know, like our little league, which would be 8 to 12, so they have all the fundamentals down, and then continue to play with experience. So that's our goal.
Absolutely. And you said that, you know, people are starting to take notice. Some of your teammates are having a pop about GB, and I guess that some of that was down to what happened in September. You know, you and the guys put up an absolutely awesome show in Brooklyn. Can you just sort of take us back to that time? You know, how brilliant was it to beat Brazil, but then, you know, come so close to, you know, being in the big shakeup in, you know, this time next month? You know, was it, I guess, mixed emotions for you guys?
It was mixed emotion. It was definitely, first off, a lot of excitement toward it. I know a lot of my buddies in the pro game who rarely ever do it was just like, hey, man, we watching you guys, you know, like, good luck today. So I know we got a lot of exposure in that type of way. And then, you know, we gave it our all versus Israel. They had a solid team. They had some solid pitching, you know, and it kind of came down to that. And, I mean, it was one of those games where you kind of felt defeated, even though you shouldn't, because you put a good showing. But
you just, for me personally, I knew how much it would have been and would have meant for GB and for the whole nation. And, you know, I talked to Liam afterwards, and we were just kind of like, man, we were so close. And so in that regard, it kind of hurt. But obviously, you have to look at the whole picture and see the progress being made. But I was definitely hurt. Since we play so many games, I don't really – no, I shouldn't say care if we win or lose. But, you know, you lose, and then, hey, we got the next one the next day. So you kind of forget about it. But this one kind of stung with me. I know I drove home the next day, and it was a tough one to swallow.
Yeah, but I guess in a little bit of time, you sort of reflected on the fact that you guys were starting with Spencer Kreisberg of the Southampton Mustangs on the mound, and he was absolutely brilliant. But on the other side of the ball, it was Jason Marquis who's pitched, you know, how many MLB games?
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Exactly right. And I talked to Spence. I know Spencer very well, and I was trying to get like one more out of him because he was pitching so well. I was like, come on, Spence, one more. And he's like, Chris, I haven't thrown this much in forever. I was like, I know, one more. But
But it was he. I mean, he's outstanding, just outstanding. I mean, there's no much more. And the whole time was awesome. You know, it was a great experience, and we put a showing in that. You know, one day we'll be eventually able to get there.
Well, I hope so. It certainly looked like you were having a lot of fun. Just sort of last question on GB. There were a few guys certainly watching it as a fan who stood out. Was there anyone from, you know, your view? As part of the squad, particularly some of the players who you might not have played with before, who stuck out for you, who we can maybe look at this year as a person to keep an eye on?
That's a good question. I mean, I guess it would be, you know, I got a couple of my buddies who I know. Josh Smith, he's on the Oakland A's right now. Tucker Barnhart, the real catcher, or the other catcher for the Reds, he's looking to have a breakout year. They were all kind of watching the game. Let's see. I mean, just a bunch of those guys. Ryan Lamar, he's on the Angels right now. He's going to be playing opposite of Trout. He's a Michigan guy, and I know he was watching it. It was, you know, it was all over. I mean, I was just getting texts left and right about it. I know even Donald Lutz was saying, you know, we're rooting for you guys, man. You know, take it home for us, European nations. And so it was it was cool to see that kind of camaraderie and just kind of staying together.
And what about your teammates? Which of your teammates do you think has got a big future ahead of them? I know some of the Bahamian guys were turning heads out there.
Oh, I mean, they all have. They all float like deer, and they're unbelievable. The energy they provide. I mean, obviously, you talk about Champ down there at the, you know, big things are going to come from him. I'm excited about some of these pitchers working with him too, you know. But literally, these kids are so young that they got the world in front of them that they stay on the right path, keep working hard. You know, they all could have good things coming.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. Yeah, for Champ and Jazz and Todd and all of those guys, they all seem like characters as well. So I imagine it was fun to be around them.
They bring a nice little atmosphere before the game, keep everyone loose. That was definitely pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I think they kept people loose whilst they were on the field, as far as I could see. I don't think I've seen anyone more laid back on a baseball field than Albert Cartwright. It was a pleasure to watch.
Man, he could swing it too. I mean, all these guys are good ball players, you know, and most of them, Albert more a little bit older, but some of these other guys just being 19, 20, 21, it's pretty impressive for them to, you know, to do what they did at their tournament, especially with all the with all of America and everybody else, all of the world watching.
Quite. So we'll sort of leave GB there. The other thing that you do a lot of, which I mentioned at the top there, is coaching. You've got your own facility, Primetime, and you run that, I believe, with a few of your friends from college or from the minor league. So can you just sort of tell us a little bit about what the facility is and how it's part of your life, really?
Absolutely. So we got about six big cages and an indoor facility here in Washington, D.C. And we partnered up with a little kind of city right outside, like right on the Pentagon. It's called Alexandria. And from there, you know, we started having two travel ball baseball teams. We're all the way up to 11 travel ball baseball teams right now. We give camps, lessons, clinics, all that good stuff. You know, but the biggest thing is with the coaching is, you know, like having our little dynasty over here, you know, teaching the game the right way on how to play it day in and day out. Sort of the exact same things that Coach Liam and I have been talking about of how do we mold a baseball player to play the game the correct way. And I'm telling you, these kids are coming a long way and they're starting to get to that high school age when, you know, that's when you start getting recruited in there, and it's been pretty cool to see, and pretty cool to kind of see their progress going through life.
And some of those guys now, so you're saying, are they actually getting recruited? Are they being picked up by colleges, guys who've been involved with you for a while?
So they're all going to be freshmen in high school, and high schools around here are already trying to take them away from their local high schools. Wow. And that's even crazy even to think about right now with them being 14 and 15 year old. So, you know, we try and keep colleges away from right now. We do have one of my good buddies who has a very, very good chance of, if he keeps working hard, you know, to get looked at in the draft. But, I mean, he's still an eighth grader going into his freshman year. So a lot can happen. But, you know, in the next few years here with this hard work they're going on, I don't have a doubt in my mind that some of these kids are going to have a you know, a chance to play in the college or definitely in the professional leagues.
And obviously the aim for you is, you know, to get back into the professional game at some level. The independent thing, it's a question for you to ask yourself as and when it presents itself. But I guess that, you know, prime time is about investing in your own future and your friends and your colleagues' future. So is it scalable? You know, is this the, you know, the six batting cage facility, or are we going to see the, you know, the Chris Bassett baseball coaching empire at some point in the future?
Yeah. You know, it's definitely something. I definitely think that's going to be the next step. Whenever my playing career could be done, it could be in a month. It could be, you know, I could play this whole season and play another 10 years. But I feel like after that, I feel like, you know, I would love to go into coaching. I have that passion to kind of relate to the fellas, young and old. You know, I have a lot of good buddies in the college game right now that I may go there, I may go there. We just got options, and in life, options are always a good thing. So I guess we'll just kind of have to see, and time will tell.
So you mentioned that you've worked with Liam. I guess you've known Liam as a teammate and as a colleague for a few years. So have you been involved in what Liam's trying to do in terms of improving the coaching here on the UK side of the pond as well?
Absolutely. We've talked and everything about it, and our goal was to get it. I was trying to make a couple visits over there, obviously with the off-season being so short, and I just got married on January 7th, so with wedding planning and honeymoon and all that, this off-season was kind of short for everything to kind of get over there. But I know I'll be able to get over to the UK and just kind of help out whatever he needs, because we basically have the same philosophies in that. And the more knowledge, in a sense, you know, for him to have, the better. Because, I mean, we took a group of people over here who liked baseball but just weren't very interested in it, who wanted to play but just didn't know how to get going. And then when they played, they were just absolutely terrible. And so as soon as you're not good at something, you don't want to do it anymore. So, you know, we built this up to a kind of a nice community over here, and he realizes that it's like, okay, how do we get that out of, you know, UK? I think it's the same way. The guys want to play. They love the game. It's just when they play, they may not be the best at it, and so they get frustrated. But, you know, and that starts with the youth. If we can change that, get the fundamentals in, you know, I know I'll be over there helping Liam out as soon as possible. So just kind of seeing from that.
Awesome. And without sort of putting a hex on you, because, you know, we would dearly hope that you're going to get something sorted and we're going to see you in spring training in a couple of weeks time. But if you can't, then, you know, you're very welcome. And we'd love to see you over here. I can certainly say that both my current rec softball team in London and the one that I'm going to go and play for in Manchester in a couple of weeks time, you know, you're welcome any time, and, you know, we'll pay in beer, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't go wrong with that.
So just on coaching, I wanted to touch on a couple of things about coaching catchers particularly, because I think it's something that people who get into baseball and have been watching it for a few years, even people who would consider themselves as sort of semi-experts, find catching quite mysterious and difficult to follow. So you I guess train young catchers, and I kind of was wondering what specifically you're looking for a young guy who you decide you want to put him as a catcher. Why do you put a person there? Is it just because they put their hand up and say, I'll give it a go? Or are you looking at a kid who takes the ball well in the infield, or, you know, has a good ability to work with his colleagues, for example?
Right. The ability to work with colleagues during teammates is always great, but not something you look for too young, because, I mean, some kids are just shy, but most of the outspoken ones are always the better athletes because they have that, so they want to go to shortstop or somewhere else. Let's see, for me to pick a catcher, in a sense, and to see the good qualities of a catcher at a younger age, and even in high school, I mean, I pretty much look at two things. One is, two, can he catch the ball, and can he receive it well? And that's on the physical side, because honestly, no coach is ever going to put a catcher back there if you can't catch the ball, and it gets quite frustrating. And two, honestly, just the hardest working player is usually the one I want back there, because I've always learned that if you work hard back there and show you're working hard, even sometimes if you can't block, if you can't throw out anybody, you know, the team will follow your lead. And if you have someone who's lazy back there, your teammates tend to be lazy. So those two qualities, you know, whether that's hardworking, I like to describe my guys as being like little animals back there, like Tasmanian devils, just bouncing around, jumping around like crazy, you know, always having life and energy back there. And I mean, it truly plays, you know, it makes a whole lot of difference. So if we catch that ball and then just kind of have that work ethic of nonstop, just don't take a pitch off, you know, good things can kind of happen, because you can always teach blocking and you can teach throwing and arm strength and all that. So those are my two qualities that I always tell my catchers they better have, or else probably won't be catching for me.
And what is it in terms of the time scale for when you're teaching those things? Is it, I guess to start with, it's just a lot of reps. It's meatballs, you know, getting progressively faster and faster. But when do you start showing them a different pitch, telling them to block, getting them to throw out runners? I mean, is it, you know, I guess it's different for every kid, but what's the pattern that you tend to follow?
I mean, the only thing we'll do is, I mean, we cover everything, especially at prime time. We want them to have the full knowledge now, so we're not kind of holding them back. And I may treat them a little bit differently than, say, I would catch, but it's really not that much different compared to it. You know, for instance, we have this 8-year-old who came to us 2 years ago, and he, not going to lie, you know, he worked hard, wasn't very good, and in 2 years, he's able to block everything and make some strong throws down to second. So we're not going to hold these kids back by any means. So, I mean, 8 years old, they come in here, we're teaching them how they stance, how they catch the ball, how they throw and block. And then we'll mix in. We don't have any of our kids throw any curveballs until they're after 12. And then that is still limited to about one per inning, maybe that. Maybe three the whole game. So they kind of have to pick their moments just to kind of develop their fastball changeup type stuff for their kids. You know, because most coaches are, they really care about winning, and their ego gets in the way too much. And for us, we realize it's about the kids and how they develop as, you know, young boys to men, and physically and then mentally. So, you know, if we tell them to learn that fastball changeup, and then eventually we'll start working on that breaking speed. So it's the same thing with catchers. You know, let's just crush the fundamentals, and then we'll eventually get a little bit more complex when we start talking about pitch calling and all that stuff.
Great. That sounds really fascinating, actually. I'd like to have a chance to see you in action. And in terms of the technique, I guess that these guys are quite lucky that you yourself have caught at a really high level in the pros. But how do you teach the receiving technique? Is it show and tell? Is it video? And I was going to ask, the question I was going to ask was, could a non-catcher conceivably learn to do it? But you've just told me, you know, you taught an 8-year-old kid to do it in 2 years. So I guess the answer is yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Obviously, what I like to do is I start with the basics with everything, you know, to the simple fact of they don't even have a glove on and they're standing up and kind of working their way down all the way to the stances, which I think stances for a younger kid is extremely important. Because if you're in the wrong stance, you're going to have a tough time catching everything or blocking or throwing. So with that being said, once they kind of master me just literally underhand flipping them the ball and catching it, we'll gradually progress up to me throwing. And then when my arm's tired, which usually happens quite a bit, I'll just turn on the pitching machine and to kind of get them those live reps. And I like that pitching machine a lot because, you know, if something's a little too easy, I'll turn it up some more. And there's always a limit where it's too fast that you kind of have an understanding of, okay, I got to scale back down with this, you know, this kid. But that's kind of my philosophy. I'm going to push you and it's kind of seeing how much I can push you and how willing you are to do that. And, you know, there's kind of that edge you kind of have to feel. You kind of have to read the kid and kind of see where he wants.
Taking a sort of a step into the more complex, it's not every day I'm going to have an opportunity to speak to a guy who knows catching as well as you. So it feels appropriate to ask you about a couple of things that always come up in conversations about catching. The first one is about pitch framing. So that's like the in thing for catchers. You know, people are getting signed and they're getting really big payoffs. People like Jason Castrill, based on the fact that they are excellent framers or perceived as such. But then there's some conversation going around that, you know, it's not all about framing anymore. That's jumped the shark. What's your view on framing? Is it a really important thing that you need as a pro level catcher, or is it just a thing that people are talking about right now?
No, I think it definitely is. Pitch framing is everything in a sense, and you can, you know, it's one with pitch framing and how you receive the ball. I mean, it makes a huge difference to the umpire, and obviously if you get the umpire on your side, I mean, there's been times when big leaguers come up who know me and always talk to the umpire before they step in the box and be like, careful, he likes, you know, don't let Chris fool you right here. I know he's good at catching the ball, you know, don't let him give you 6 inches outside type stuff. And I'm like, no way, I don't do that. So it definitely is very, very important. We try and teach it at a younger age. How do we get into it? And, I mean, it's very important because you can control a staff. The pitcher's happy on the mound with you, how you receive the ball. He doesn't have to worry about that. Now he can just worry about his job of executing the pitch at the right time and anything to simplify it for the pitcher, because obviously he's got a million thoughts in his head. So I think it's absolutely important.
And how do you teach it? Is it just muscle memory? It's like when you catch the ball here, make sure you're moving slowly and quietly, or is it, you know, are there any particular techniques that you have to teach it?
That's a good question. I think it's a little bit of everything. I think it's all three. With that being muscle memory to techniques are very important, because if your techniques are off, then you're in trouble. But even if your technique is perfect and you don't see these reps, it couldn't matter, and the velocity and the late movement of everything would, you know, throw you off. So I think it's a little combination of, you know, muscle memory to technique, but more importantly, game live reps. You got to be able to catch back there, and you got to be able to see all this ball moving every which way, because, you know, AAA to the big leagues, the ball doesn't stay straight unless you throw 105 miles per hour and only one guy, maybe two guys out there throw it right now.
Yeah, and in terms of, you just mentioned there, just sort of picking up on something that you said about fooling people, how do you do that? It's funny, because I've seen a few catchers who do certain things, like, you know, tapping the floor or touching the umpire's leg and things like that. Is that part of it? Is that part of what you is in your armory as a catcher? Not you personally, but, you know, what is it? You know, is it just where you move your arm, or do you have little sort of sneaky ways telling an umpire you're doing something?
Absolutely. I mean, the umpire and I talk the entire game. And that's one of the biggest thing. I'll read his answers to me and kind of joke around with him so he's having a good time and making sure he's staying in the game.
I love doing that. Honestly, I get bored back there sometimes too. So the umpire is kind of like a friend out there. We can kind of chat away with anything about it. And it's the same thing with the pitchers. You know, it's kind of reading their body language. If they look nervous, relax them. If they look like they don't have the energy, to fire them up somehow. You know, and it just kind of, over the years of experience of just reading these guys and seeing if it, you know, what they need at the right time to hopefully get the best out of them. Because obviously, you know, if we have good pitchers, you're usually going to win a lot of ball games. So, you know, it's just trying to maximize their potential.
So a lot of catching, particularly at the level that you've been operating at for the last few years, is about the mind games and reading other people, as it is about, you know, getting the ball in a big leather glove.
Oh, absolutely, because you got to realize all those names you mentioned earlier, to the Amir, to Cody, to Rob, they're all very young kids on the verge of stardom, but they're not there yet. So they think they're the man. They think they can do whatever they want, in a sense, on the mound, and it's kind of like, well, slowing them down, you know, talking to them, being their friend so they trust you, and then getting the best out of them. Because usually, like I said, if you just kind of relax the pitcher's mind, in a sense, whoever they are, and just, hey, don't try to do too much, just execute what you can do, usually good things are going
to
happen.
You're starting to make me feel a bit sorry for them, that they're all going to be up in Cincinnati this year and you're not going to be there with them. But I guess that they've got Tucker Barnhart to look after them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously you wish you could be up there, and that's everyone's dream and goal, you know, but everything works for a reason, so, you know, I wish nothing but the best for them. I'll be following them, and I'm, you know, if I am back home when they come to D.C.,
you know, we'll meet up and grab a beer together. So, you know, I'll see them soon, and I wish nothing but the best for them.
Awesome. And so just to sort of bring this conversation about catching to a close, the other thing I wanted to touch on was game calling. And you hear conflicting reports about how much people at AAA level are allowed to call. A lot gets made of the fact that in college, it's the bench coaches who are calling the game, and sometimes that's the case in the minor leagues. Was that the case for you last year?
No, I've called my whole game all through the Cincinnati Reds organization. They let their catcher call the whole game, which I think it should be. And then we would have meetings on, okay, why'd you throw this pitch at this time? What were you thinking? And then learning that way. To me, that's the best way to go about it. I've had a few talks with my college coaches' buddies about that. I don't think there's any college catchers anymore calling their own game. But there's a lot of money on the line, and it's tough to leave it to a kid who doesn't do it. And so that's why they do it. It's their job's at stake. And honestly, some of these catchers aren't mature enough because it starts in youth ball where they don't even call their own games because the coaches think they know what's better and it's going to help out a 13-year-old playing a team, which, wins and losses are awesome, but they're also 13. So it doesn't matter too much. So I think American baseball is kind of losing it a little bit. Like, let the kids play and, talk to them and evaluate it after the game or mid-pitch, mid-inning, stuff like that. But I got to call mine, which was very good, very luckily. But I think it was junior, senior year, I got to call my pitches at Michigan as well. But that's because I worked with the coach. So, it's a give and take here and there.
So I think the moral of the story, certainly coming through from this section of the conversation, is, work hard and prove that you can do these things and earn the right to do them, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the last thing on that is just, is that more important or less important than the rapport that you have with your teammates on the mound? We've talked a bit about framing, a bit about game calling, a bit about how you read your colleagues. They're all important, but if you only could choose one, which one's the most important for catchers in the modern game?
Oof, that's a tough one to go. I think, I'm not quite sure. I don't know if I could. I bet my answer could change here, say, next year. I think framing and pitch receiving is huge because you can always discuss game calling and you can always get help on that. Friendships can always improve, but a lot of pitchers love it if you fight for a pitch. So I think with that being said, give and take it, probably pitch receiving, especially after what I've seen out of some of these other catchers, that you can always improve that. It makes it all around extremely talented catcher to get all three of those down.
And I guess if you're good at framing and it improves your relationships with your pitchers, then that's helpful too.
Exactly. Then they'll love you and they know you're trying to get every strike back them for them, because it really irks a pitcher when you botch a strike or he thinks is a strike and you make it look like a ball. And that's a good way to lose a friend real quickly.
I bet it is. Right. Those are all my questions. I think that all that remains is for me to say thanks a lot for your time. And to sort of ask you where we can find you on Twitter, on Facebook, both you and Primetime. Where can we give you a follow and keep up to date with your career, either as a player or as a coach?
Absolutely. I mean, Twitter's more so. Twitter's great. I got a bunch of followers in there, and everyone's been great on there. Sebersat10, as I'm sure you know.
There's been a bunch of giveaways I like to give to all the guys. I just shipped that bat over, and that was nice for you guys. So, you can find me on Facebook and everything at Chris Bursette. Primetime Baseball is on Facebook. We got Twitter. We got Instagram. We got a lot of cool drills for catching, hitting, pitching. We're doing arm velocity type stuff right now. That's just, we're seeing tremendous, tremendous strides out of some of our sophomore and juniors in high school. I mean, putting them on the map for colleges, throwing 86 to 89 right now, miles per hour. So, all that stuff is online. Just Google Primetime. Everything will be there, or my name, or just shoot me a message. I'm always, I try and interact with you guys as much as possible because it makes it fun for me too. And obviously just the more important goal of just trying to expand the game in the UK and, make us be one of those premier nations out there.
Yeah, well, I think you can certainly say that you're doing as much as anyone, if not more, to do that. And I think that the conversation that we've had this evening should leave everybody else in no doubt about that too. So, Chris, thanks very much for your time, and we'll be keeping an eye out for you. Hopefully, you'll find a place to play this year, and we'll all be cheering you on from over here. Thanks a lot for your time, mate.
Thanks for having me tonight.